Hey there, y'all. We'll get to that episode that you pressed play on in just a second, but I wanted to make sure you knew that the club is opening again for new members next Tuesday, April 30th. The club is a virtual community of parents of kids with big, baffling behaviors and vulnerable nervous systems, and you can read all about it over at robingoble.com/the club. If you already get emails from me, you'll get a message on the 30th reminding you that the club is open. Otherwise, set yourself a calendar reminder to go to robingoble.com/the club next Tuesday, the 30th. Alrighty, let's get to that show you're waiting for. Hey, y'all. It is so fantastic to be back with you again, to be sitting in front of this microphone and to imagine connecting with each of you listening all over the world. I know the podcast has been a little unpredictable here in 2022, and it is my anticipation that from this day moving forward, the podcast will be back to its regular weekly new episodes. I'm Robin Goble. This is the Parenting After Trauma podcast. This is a podcast where I take the complex neuroscience that helps us have a little bit better understanding about the behaviors that are happening in our homes so that we can try to decode what's happening and then figure out how to help our kids and help ourselves, hoping that maybe our homes can get a little bit less chaotic. I know so many of you are parenting kids with a history of trauma, but that's not true about all of you. So welcome, welcome, welcome. My work really focuses on supporting parents of kids with vulnerable nervous systems, big baffling behaviors. And yes, a lot of y'all have parents of kids who have experienced trauma, but I know some of you have kids who have vulnerable nervous systems for all sorts of other reasons. So welcome. And again, thank you just so much for your patience, for sticking around, and for continuing to be a listener. What I want to talk about today is the behavior of people pleasing. It's not a behavior that I think gets talked about a lot. And in some ways, because as the parent or as the adult or the grown-up involved, people pleasing is just not the most distressing behavior that we're dealing with. And in some ways, when we have kids who have people pleasing behaviors, this can actually make our lives a little bit easier. This is especially true if we have kids in the family that also have bigger, more dangerous, more stressful behaviors that our people-pleasing kids sometimes can kind of fall under the radar. So that's totally normal. And I do think people-pleasing as a behavior warrants its own episode. So people-pleasing isn't the same thing as cooperation or being cooperative. Cooperation is a behavior that comes out of being in a connected mutual relationship. When you cooperate with somebody, there's usually a compromise involved, but there's no loss of autonomy. Like, you don't have to give up yourself. You don't have to give up your thoughts, your desires, your preferences. You might not get what you want because that's what cooperation is all about, right? There is some experience of I want something, you want something, and they're not totally the same. So we have to cooperate in a way to kind of make it work and help us both feel satisfied, right? And so because of that aspect, cooperation also requires a decent amount of frustration tolerance. And then a lot of motivation to maintain a connected relationship. People pleasing, on the other hand, is a behavior that comes from fear. People pleasing is a stress response. People pleasing involves abandoning ourselves because it can feel too scary or maybe too uncomfortable to kind of regulate through the feelings that come up when there's these inevitable ruptures in relationships. And by ruptures in relationships, I don't necessarily mean big things, but there's a rupture in a relationship if you want something and somebody else wants something else, or you don't have the same feelings about something. There's always the, anytime we're not in like complete attunement with one another, there's a tiny little micro rupture. And tolerating those micro ruptures is an important part of being in, you know, a mutual, truly connected relationship with anybody else. People pleasing is a stress response that struggles to tolerate those micro ruptures. People pleasing behavior is commonly found in people who have a limited, or let's not say limited, like an underdeveloped sense of self, right? That it's easy to fall into people pleasing behaviors when you don't have a real solid kind of connection or understanding to who am I? What are my likes? What are my preferences? As well as a solid understanding of I'm okay, even if this relationship feels uncomfortable for a moment or feels rocky for a moment, or there's a rupture in this relationship. So again, people pleasing is a stress response. It's a way we abandon ourselves in order to not fall out of attunement or connection with the other person. Regretfully, when people pleasing is involved and we're abandoning ourselves, we are also losing true connection. But it can feel like a way to stay safe, right? Like if I abandon myself and only do things or like things that this other person likes, I'm much less likely to stress them out. And therefore, I'm much more likely to stay safe. Some people call this behavior fawning. I look at people pleasing behavior as a behavior that emerges from the dissociation continuum. If we're going to use Dr. Perry's state dependent functioning language, the dorsal vagal complex, if we're going to use polyvagal language in the model that I teach, I talk about the possum brain or the possum pathway, and there's different levels of kind of possum behavior that coincides with Dr. Perry's state dependent functioning categories. And I call the behavior of people pleasing emerging from the possum brain, who is a trickster possum. This is a possum who pretends to be something that they're not in order to decrease the stress in a situation or in a relationship. So again, quick little summary. I think about this people-pleasing behavior as coming from the dissociation continuum or the dorsal vagal complex, and is a behavior that comes from what I call the trickster possum. Think about like a chameleon or this part of self that will kind of turn themselves into whatever they think is going to keep them the safest or keep the other person the happiest with them. You can read a little bit more about what I mean when I'm talking about the possum pathway by going to robingoble.com/possum brain. And I also go further into describing the owl watchdog and possum brain model in my free ebook and masterclass, What Behavior Really Is, that you can grab over at robingoble.com/masterclass. So the trickster possum is tricky for a lot of different reasons. The trickster possum, like I said, kind of acts like a chameleon, always trying to figure out what mask you should wear in order to stay safe. Like, who should I be in the situation in order to be the safest? I also think that this behavior is tricky or like a trickster, because this trickster possum can seem like he's super regulated and really connected to the owl brain. Because of this, it's very easy to overlook that these behaviors are a stress response. They're coming from a part of the nervous system that's in distress. It is just a stress response behavior that's pretty different than most stress response behaviors, which we tend to find stressful, right? Like most of our kids' behaviors that emerge from a stress response, we find stressful. People-pleasing behavior, you got to really know what you're looking for to recognize it as distress and to feel stressed about it. And we'll talk in a little bit about why people-pleasing behavior is something that we should feel stressed about, why it is something that we should want to address, because it is actually a pretty dangerous behavior. We'll talk about that in a bit. The number one thing to do if you're parenting a kid with a lot of people-pleasing behaviors is to do exactly what I just said. Recognize this as a stress response behavior. That, you know, some kids have a lot of different stress response behaviors. So there could be times where you have a child who's real people-pleasing, but is also sometimes oppositional or aggressive. Those are easier to recognize as a stress response. So start looking at these people-pleasing behaviors also as a stress response. Believe it or not, just how we look at the behavior is an intervention. So number one thing to do is just see it for what it is, recognize it as a behavior of distress. One of the things that can be true about these trickster, people-pleasing possum kids is that this is a stress response or a coping skill that they've had for a very, very, very long time. And because they've been practicing this skill of, I will just be whoever you need me to be, they have either forgotten who they are or weren't ever really sure in the first place. So a really important part of supporting these people-pleasing trickster possum kids is helping them discover themselves, helping them come into connection with who they are. So these kids need a lot of opportunity to express themselves in safe ways, to be allowed to express themselves and to be allowed to experiment with expressing themselves and to be allowed to change their minds. So one of my kind of general rule of thumbs is if it's safe, say yes. This is my general rule of thumb for trickster possum kids. Other kids need different ways to help them find felt safety. Trickster possum kids need lots of opportunity to experiment with discovering themselves and finding out what they like and what they don't like. So for these kids in particular, if it's safe, say yes. Do they want to have purple hair? Sure. Say yes. Are they going to wear mismatched clothes? Or like maybe when my kid was young, they weren't mismatched. They were like matchy matchy, right? Like orange shirts, orange pants, which isn't exactly matching, but it was like too much matching, but you know, whatever. Yes. You want to have 12 ponytails in? Yes. Right. Listen to this kind of music? Yes. If it's safe, and you have a trickster possum kid who is really working to know who they are, what they like, and really find and connect in with themselves, say yes. It is dangerous to be out in the world not knowing who you are, what you like, what your boundaries are, what your preferences are, what kind of behavior is acceptable to you when you're in relationship with someone else. And so we really want to help these trickster or people-pleasing possum brain kids find out who they are, which means we have to be very flexible and allowing them to really experiment. So this might be a kid who's like, I want purple hair. And then tomorrow they say, I hate this purple hair. Can we make it blue instead? Yes, right? They're expressing an opinion. They're experimenting with what do I like? What do I don't like? Sometimes these kids don't know what they like until they try. And then they try and they're like, ooh, I don't like this after all. Right. And then it's, I don't want this anymore. I don't want to do this anymore. These aren't kids who need us to teach them how to stick with a commitment. These are kids who need us to honor their expression of their preferences and allow them to change their mind. Think about it even with food, right? They can express a food preference and you can honor it with what they eat or what they don't eat, right? We want these kids to really have experiences where they get to learn, I am me, my feelings and my preferences are valid, and I can express them without repercussion. Now, without repercussion doesn't mean always get my way, right? Like that's not reasonable, in a lot of ways. Without repercussion means the person I express my feelings to is responsible for taking care of their feelings. So a quick example from my own life and something we have to really pay attention to is allowing my kid, who has a lot of opinions about food, specifically the sensory experience with food. And I have a husband who loves to cook. It's one of like the primary ways he expresses how much he loves us and takes care of us. Now, obviously, sometimes these two things can come into conflict with each other. And so in our family, we have to be very aware of allowing my child to express how he feels about food and not taking it personally, and teaching my son to express those things in a respectful way, right? He doesn't have to like something simply because somebody put in the time and effort to make it for him, right? Like, his preferences are not less important than my husband feeling as though somebody is, you know, grateful that he made this food. Both have valid needs and experiences. And my son can express, I don't care for this. He is allowed to have that opinion. And then as the grownups, it's our job not to take it personally and then try to negotiate this, right? Like, there's a lot that goes into this. It's changed over the years. Sometimes it's reasonable to have alternatives. Sometimes it's not reasonable to have alternatives. It's, you know, what we do next is pretty nuanced. And again, it's changed over the years. My point is that we have needed to make sure that we allow for that expression, because my son's preferences, sense of self, likes and dislikes are as important as my husband's feelings. Like, one doesn't get to trump the other. That's where cooperation comes in. Like, how can both of these people have their autonomy and their own needs respected? And mostly this just comes down to finding appropriate ways to communicate and then honoring each other's needs in a cooperative way. Maybe you have a trickster possum brain kid who has decided they want to try soccer or gymnastics or underwater basket weaving. I don't know, right? And they want to try. And you say, yes, let's sign you up. And then in 1 week, they say, oh, I don't really like this after all, right? Some kids need the experience of learning to stick with things they don't love. But trickster possum brain kids need the experience of knowing, you know, being in relationship with somebody who will honor their self-exploration of what they like and what they don't like, right? Again, these aren't kids that we have to teach how to have enough frustration tolerance to do stuff that they don't really want to do. These are kids who are doing stuff they don't really want to do all the time. They already have that skill. We want to teach them the other skill, that they can have wants and needs and preferences that are different from other people, and it can be okay. With these kids, I think it's really helpful to use the parenting behavior of becoming what I'll call a sportscaster. This is a common behavior for therapists, something that child play therapists use a lot, which is just narrating what you're seeing. It's not good or bad. It's not pleasing or not pleasing. You're just narrating. Ah, you want to wear those leggings every day. You must really like something about those leggings. Are they soft? Are they warm? Right? Or that's a way that we're helping a child who maybe doesn't even know that they have preferences about things. But when we narrate for them, like, oh, you wear those leggings every day, you must like something about them. Now we are giving them a mirror that's helping them see, well, there must be something they like about them or they wouldn't wear them every day. What is it? What is it about those leggings that they like? The other thing about this is this is sometimes a pretty frustrating behavior for parents, right? Kids who wear the same clothes every single day, parents can feel frustrated by this for multiple different reasons. And so there's probably some negative energy surrounding this behavior. And so shifting that negative energy can be really beneficial. And instead looking at it from a place of curiosity on our part, you know, as the grownups part of like, oh, what is it about this thing that I would call rigid? What is it about this that why is this child choosing this? There's got to be something. So that's a way of, you know, helping kids discover that they even have preferences or things that they like more than other things. Another example is you could say something like, ah, I noticed that when we have mac and cheese, you always ask for seconds. When we have spaghetti with meat sauce, there's usually some left on your plate. I wonder if that means you like mac and cheese more. Now, your child might not even answer, right? A real people pleaser might not even answer because they're still really worried about like, ooh, what's the right answer, right? But providing them the feedback, what you've noticed about them is a way of helping them notice and come to know themselves. If you think about it, we do this with babies constantly. This is how babies, you know, learn about their preferences and likes and like who they are, because we're constantly narrating for babies like, oh, you picked up that rattle again. You must love that rattle. Oh, what a big smile you have. Or, ooh, that look on your face when I'm giving you this avocado. Ooh, you must think this avocado is so yucky, right? And then when our babies give us cues about things they like, we tend to give them more of those things. And when they give us cues about things they don't like, we tend to give them less of those things. And so they're learning, people respect my boundaries. It's okay for me to have things I like and I don't like. People notice those things about me and there's nothing wrong with them, even if it's different than what my mom or dad like, right? So much comes into that kind of sports casting behavior that we do when our kids are little. We can do that when they're older now as well. We can also overtly, like really clearly teach kids that it's okay to have preferences that are different than other people, and that it's that other person's job to tolerate their own feelings about it. So let's say you have two little kids and one of them is more of a people pleaser than the other. And you notice that they're always watching the TV show that your non people pleasing kid likes, right? And so maybe you say something to your people pleaser child that says, sounds something like, huh, you really like Peppa Pig. And I know your brother really likes Paw Patrol. I notice you both watch way more Paw Patrol than Peppa Pig. Next time, let's watch Peppa Pig. Your brother can watch with us, or he doesn't have to. If he doesn't like it, he can take a break and play something else. Either is a fine choice. So really explicitly teaching, it's okay if what you like and want isn't the same as what other people like and want. It's okay for them to be upset by that. And it's okay for them to either do something they don't love or choose to do something else. It will be fine. Both are. That is a fine choice to make. It's a valid choice to make. So really be explicitly teaching that and then supporting these kids with the follow through and supporting and, you know, regulating them when their brother is upset.
If you're listening to the Baffling Behavior Show as a therapist or some other kind of helping professional, I'll bet you've wondered how to incorporate owls, watchdogs, and possums directly into your work with kids. My colleague, Rose LaPierre, and I co-wrote a course together called All Behavior Makes Sense, Play Therapy with Kids with Vulnerable Nervous Systems. And Rose will be teaching it virtually in May. The course offers 6 CEs, including APT CEs, through the TheraPlay Institute. Part 1 of this course begins May 10th, so you have until then to register. But space is limited due to CE requirements, so I wouldn't delay registering if I was you. I'll put a live link down in the show notes, or just go to robingoble.com/TheraPlay2024.
One final thing I want to say about people-pleasing behavior is that I'm a people pleaser. And so as a parent, I've been on the lookout for two things. One is when I'm unconsciously expecting my son to have people pleasing behavior too, because it way deep in my mind, like not in my conscious thoughts, but way, way, way deep buried in my mind, I can have a belief that prioritizing other people's feelings is how you stay safe. And I have definitely watched myself and really track myself and try to pay attention to times when I am behaving in a way in which what I'm communicating to my son is, if you want to be okay, you have to prioritize keeping other people happy. And I've noticed this at different time periods in his life, at when him being his like strong-minded, autonomous self has caused me stress. And I watch him do this with his peers or with teachers, right? And I can notice myself wanting to like rush in and just say, oh, it's okay. It's okay. This isn't a big deal. Go ahead and just, you know, I really want him to use my coping skill and kind of like abandon himself so that it doesn't rock the boat. So that's something I've really paid attention to in parenting him, is that I don't kind of project that onto him, because it's simply not true. He can be himself and still be safe. Other thing that I pay attention to, because these kinds of things come out unconsciously, is that our kids learn so much more from what we're doing than what we're saying. And so there's definitely times where he watches me behave in a way that I would call people pleasing. I do that with the family. I do that with friends. I do that with, you know, like our extended family. I do that with colleagues and in my business. It's something I work really, really, really hard on and try to be very mindful of, but certainly at times still fall into these, you know, people pleasing patterns. And he notices and he's watching. And even if he's not consciously aware of it, the way that the mind works and the way that our memory networks work and the way that we're learning, we learn so much more just based on what we're watching than what people actually say to us. So I've had to just really pay attention to that. And I'm not shaming myself. I'm not being critical of myself. I'm not blaming myself for this, or giving myself a really hard time. It's something I've worked really hard on, being compassionate towards myself and just really pay attention and really noticing. And sometimes talk about when I've noticed I did have kind of people pleasing behavior and circle back around to him and say, hey, I did this. I wonder if you noticed. I did this because it's stressful for me when other people are unhappy. The truth is it's okay to have an opinion that other people don't like. It's okay to want something other people don't like. In a cooperative relationship, in a connected relationship with people I love, we're always, you know, compromising. And that's different than people pleasing. So I can do both. Like I can pay really close attention to my behaviors. And then when I notice myself kind of falling into these patterns, I can help a little bit by making them really explicit and talking very overtly to my son about them. Now he's a little bit older. If you have little teeny tiny kids, how that, you know, what that sounds like and looks like might be a little bit different. But I think giving our kids a narrative for what's happening in so many circumstances is actually profoundly important. All right. So people pleasing. Yeah, I wanted to tackle that. I hope that this maybe has given you a few insights into thinking about people-pleasing behavior and some ideas about how to support your child and maybe yourself if you notice patterns of people-pleasing. People-pleasing, again, like I said at the beginning, it might not seem as dangerous as some of your other kids' big behaviors or maybe the same kids' other big behaviors. But people-pleasing behavior can become quickly dangerous. These are kids who can be easily taken advantage of. They are kids who have a really hard time setting their boundaries or even knowing what their boundaries are. And so as they get older and they're not in your direct supervision as much anymore, and they're outside, out in the world doing things that older kids and teenagers are doing, which is, experimenting with their values, experimenting with what feels good for them, what doesn't feel good to them, experimenting with, going outside their, kind of even family values, experimenting with drugs or alcohol or sex or other risky behaviors. Kids who are people pleasers are at much greater risk of experimenting with things far past what their comfort zone really is, largely because they're not even sure what their comfort zone is. And if they do know what it is, they don't have the skills that they need to tolerate setting a boundary and having somebody else be upset with them or reject them, or even if it's not that big of an overt rejection, it's still a rupture in a relationship. And we really want to help these kids develop the capacity to know who they are, know what their values are, know where that kind of point of, no, I'm not comfortable with this anymore is, know how to say those things and know how to tolerate the repercussions of the consequence of that, which is that somebody else might be upset with them. So even if it doesn't seem like a really dangerous behavior, it can become a really dangerous behavior in the future. All right. I'll be back next week. I can't wait. I am getting these podcasts all ready for you so that you have one every single week. You can head to robingoble.com/podcast to see all my podcast archives. It has a search bar. So if you have a topic you're interested in, or if you remember like, oh, I heard a podcast about lying once and now I can't find it, you can head to robingoble.com/podcast. You can search for terms like lying, control, manipulation, self-compassion, those kinds of things. And it'll show you one of my old podcast episodes and blog posts are really, are about those topics. I got all sorts of other good stuff over on my website, robingoble.com/free resources, has ebooks and video masterclasses. Of course, you can learn all about the club, which is my membership community for parents of kids with big baffling behaviors, where we have a forum, we have live events, we have this huge on-demand video library of trainings. And then my year-long immersion program for professionals who want to do the work that I'm doing with the parents in their practice. That's called Being With. There's a waiting list going for Being With right now. Applications will open sometime this summer for the 2023 cohort. So all that over at robingoble.com. I will see you here next week.
Are you ending this episode with maybe a big sigh of relief? Like, yes, finally, someone gets me and my kids. But also maybe a sense of like, okay, but now what? All right, y'all, I've got lots of possible now whats. If you want to connect with me directly, like pick my brain, have access to me almost every day, not to mention hundreds of other parents from around the world who totally get what it's like to be you, then you're going to want to join us in the club. We have monthly live events, including groups for siblings of dysregulated kids, a huge video library with something like 80 or 90 videos, plus transcripts and certificates of completion. Plus, of course, a very active forum that I'm participating in every single day.
We open for new members periodically. So go check robingoble.com/the club. If we aren't open now, you can put yourself on the waiting list and I'll let you know the moment we open for new members. That's robingoble.com/the club. Now, if you're a professional and you want to strengthen your capacity to work with the families of kids with big baffling behaviors and vulnerable nervous systems, plus use all of my materials, including a 12-module course that follows raising kids with big baffling behaviors, plus be included in an online searchable directory so families all over the world could find you, then you're looking for Being With, which is my year-long immersive training program that runs January through December. So you'll want to go to robingoble.com/beingwith, read all about it. And if you're interested, put yourself on that waiting list too. Now, if you just maybe need a little extra connection and co-regulation, but don't feel like you need to join the club, then you can just keep listening to my podcast, or you could go subscribe to my Start Here podcast, and that'll give you 10 episodes in order that will take you through cultivating a great foundation of parenting with regulation, connection, and felt safety. That's at robingoble.com/start here. You have to go there. You can't just find it in your podcast app. Or you could get yourself a copy of Raising Kids with Big Baffling Behaviors, paper book, audio book, ebook. You can get that anywhere books are sold. Or you could just head to my website, download one of my very many free resources. I keep them all really easy to access at robingoble.com/free resources. Webinars, masterclasses, ebooks, infographics, all sorts of stuff. Go check it out. See what of those things could be supportive of you or maybe to the other adults in your life who are helping support you and your child. There are just so many ways that you and I could be more connected, and you can get the amount of co-regulation and support that you need. If it feels like a lot to remember, all you have to do is go to robingoble.com and take your time clicking around, seeing what I got there. I am so, so glad you and I are connected now, and I can't wait to be with you again soon in our next episode of the Baffling Behavior Show. Bye-bye, y'all.